Welcome to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk. Here's your host, Jason Davis.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Welcome into Soccer Morning on WorldSoccerTalk.com. Very happy to have you as we get underway here on the final day of the week for me, but not for you. You'll be sticking around. Thursday and Friday, we'll have Jonathan Tannenwald sitting in this seat. Well, not physically this seat. He'll be on the show. He'll be hosting. Jonathan Tannenwald is going to take care of the show while I'm gone for a couple of days, and I'll be back on Tuesday. But we've got a big show ahead of that today. Excellent guest lineup for you today, including, to start off, talking Champions League, our good friend Janusz Michalik. He's coming up in just a couple of minutes. So much to cover in the Champions League. I mean, wow. Wow, the Champions League. Hello, England. How are you? Not very good. I can see that. Also on this program, David Amoyal, our good friend who covers Serie A. He'll talk to us about Serie A, also about Italy in the Champions League, including Juve today. And perhaps England's woes will be Italy's gains in terms of Champions League spots. Perhaps. We'll get into all of that with David Amoyal. That's at 9:40 a.m. Eastern Time. Okay, let's go. Janusz Michalik is awaiting. So let's hit the news before we do that and talk Champions League. Well, I'll start there. I'll start with the results and set the stage. Barcelona 2, Bayer Leverkusen 1. 1-0 to Bayer Leverkusen before Barcelona made their comeback. Sergio Roberto and Luis Suarez with the goals. Obviously, they were missing Lionel Messi, and they lose Andres Iniesta to a hamstring injury as well. Not a great day for Barcelona despite the win. For various reasons, papering over some cracks perhaps against Bayer Leverkusen. Bate Borisov, 3-2 winners at home over AS Roma. We'll talk to David about that one. Arsenal, home losers to Olympiacos. That's right, Olympiacos. Wenger burned by his decision to start David Ospina, who gave up a terrible own goal that eventually turned out to be the game winner. Olympiacos gets the win at the Emirates. Bayern Munich, 5-0 over Dinamo Zagreb. Excuse me. Robert Lewandowski continues his amazing form and scores a hat-trick in that game. FC Porto, 2-1 over Chelsea. Jose Mourinho goes back to Porto and loses. He dropped several big names for this match in a bid to shake things up, struggling Chelsea squad, talking about there not being any untouchables in this team, and it didn't work. It did not work. Maccabi Tel Aviv losing to Dynamo Kiev 2-0 at home. Lyon losing 1-0 to Valencia. Zenit St. Petersburg 2-1 over Ghent. Today's schedule, bunch of games today. Astana, Galatasaray. You have Malmo against Real Madrid. Shakhtar Donetsk hosting PSG. CSKA Moscow hosting PSV Eindhoven. Manchester United trying to get something good going for the English sides against Wolfsburg at home at Old Trafford. Atletico Madrid against Benfica. Gladbach will host Manchester City, who's trying to get their Champions League program on track after their loss to Juventus in the last match day. And Juventus, who we will talk to David about, is hosting Sevilla. U.S. Open Cup final tonight. Sporting Kansas City in Chester, Pennsylvania to take on the Philadelphia Union. Reports say that as many as 800 Sporting fans have traveled for this game. I don't believe the ticket sales were very brisk for the Union, so this might not be the most well-attended U.S. Open Cup final that we've seen, but it will be broadcast on television in high definition on ESPN2 at 7 p.m. Eastern. Reports have suggested, speaking of the Philadelphia Union, that they will hire Octavio Zambrano as their first technical director. Octavio Zambrano, of course, the former head coach of the Galaxy and the Metro Stars, last coach and technical director for El Nacional in his native Ecuador. This is a guy with the second highest winning percentage in league history as a manager, and now he looks to be stepping into a technical director role for the Union. They've desperately needed. They've been going on this search for a, quote, GM or a technical director or a sporting director, whatever the title happens to be, for more than a year now. Nick Sakevich talking very much about finding somebody to run the program. This is a good hire if Sakevich stays out of the way. If Sakevich allows Zambrano to do his job, this could be to the benefit of the Philadelphia Union. I think Union fans should be encouraged by this report. I'm not sure it's official yet. We will let you know when it is. Guillermo Cantu, Secretary General of the Mexican Football Federation, says that Jurgen Klopp turned down an offer or turned down an approach to be the Mexican national team manager. Obviously, Mexico looking for a replacement for Miguel Herrera. They have hired Ricardo Tuca Ferretti as a temporary manager. Interim maybe is the right tag. He's coaching club. He's coaching country. He'll take this Mexican team into the U.S. showdown at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena. Rumored candidates for the Mexico job have been numerous. They've included Marcelo Bielsa, Juan Carlos Osorio, Jorge Sampaoli, Gustavo Matosas. So we don't know exactly where things sit right now with the Mexican national team head coaching position. They seem to be going through an immense Rolodex of names. Many, many names are getting phone calls or approaches or have been rumored. It seems like every week we've got a new candidate for the Mexican national team job. We'll see if they get this done. Probably not ahead of the USA-Mexico game, of course, which happens a week from Saturday. By the way, let me remind you or let you know, I will be doing Rabble.TV with Jared Dubois for USA-Mexico. That should be fun. Saturday night, October 10th, 9:30 p.m. Eastern time. Russia's 2018 World Cup preparations, are running into trouble with the country's sports minister saying that four host cities are well behind on construction of accommodations for players, coaches, and officials. Now you think, okay, players, coaches, and officials, that's not a lot of people. They can get that done. Well, there's also reports that say that only five of the 11 cities so far have enough accommodations for supporters as well. So the fans who may travel to Russia may find it difficult to find a place to stay. We've had previous reports of Russia looking to put people into campgrounds and the like. It doesn't seem like this is coming together very well for the Russians. They do have a little less than 3 years to be ready. Let's hope that's the case. Let's hope they stamp out the racism that seems to be rampant in Russian football and Russian society. How about that? Let's do that. Let's take a break, as a matter of fact. Janusz Michalak will join us. We'll talk all of the Champions League in just a couple of minutes. Don't go anywhere. Soccer Morning, worldsoccertalk.com.
Face in the crowd. You're talking too loud.
When it comes to the USA against Mexico, this game's different. As Michael Bradley puts it, the passion, the colors, the respect, the hate. Soccer Morning listeners, I'd like to invite you to join me and Jared Dubois this Saturday for the USA versus Mexico broadcast on Rabble.TV at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Pacific. With Rabble, the concept is simple. All you have to do is tune into the USA versus Mexico game on TV, press the mute button, and then head on over to Rabble.TV to listen to me and Jared on your desktop, through your iOS Android app, or through your mobile browser. Plus, before or during the game, you can join in by posting your questions or observations in the comments section. Or why don't you create your own broadcast, call one of your team's games. It's easy. Sign up for free today. Try it out. Join me and Jared this Saturday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern for the USA versus Mexico on Rabble.TV, where it's your team and your call.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
Here we are with an opportunity to review everything that's happened in the Champions League, perhaps even look ahead to today's matches with our good friend Janusz Michalak. You know him from all over the place. Janusz, how are you?
I am doing well, Jason. How are you? I hear you're going on vacation.
I'm taking a couple of days off. You know how hard it is sometimes to pull yourself away, Janusz. Even if you know your brain needs the rest and you have to sort of step away from the game, there's always something happening.
It's impossible. I can't believe, first of all, that you need vacation from such a great job.
This is true.
It's serious. You know, a couple hours of work and unbelievable. I mean, you can say what you want. You can talk to anyone you want, and you need vacation from that. Christ.
Yanish, stop, please. All right, so let's talk Champions League, Yanish. Obviously, lots of discussion about the English teams yesterday. Arsenal, Chelsea, both losers. I suppose I have to start there. We'll get two other teams going today. This is also compounded by Manchester City losing at home to Juventus from a winning position on the last match day. And obviously, Manchester United has been fine to this point, and maybe they're the savior of English football. But what's in general, what's going on?
Well, I mean, again, I mean, there's so many theories, I suppose. You know, everybody says, you know, it's different in playing in Europe. I think there's a lot to be said about that. You know, the narrative, you know, in the past, I guess, Jason, was the British players didn't know, you know, and it was just different, right? Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if you look at these teams, there's hardly any British players. The problem, of course, is the tempo of the game, and that's the issue because, you know, even players that come from abroad, from continent to England, I think they forget how to play properly. I really do. And it's not necessarily their fault, Jason, right?
No.
I mean, you get thrown into this high-tempo game that even though probably their brain says, well, you can do it differently, but the supporters won't allow you to it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They throw a number forward because that's what the game dictates in England. That's what the fans want. Can you imagine, you know, Arsenal or Chelsea? Yeah, well, Chelsea does that from time to time. But any of the teams kind of, you know, taking the foot off the pedal and knocking the ball sideways and backwards, you know, as you need to at times in the game, right? Because sometimes you can't just overcommit going forward. And we've seen it with Arsenal, how quickly they got caught by Olympiacos after scoring, right? It's this naivety of playing certain way in England, and then you go to Europe, you have to do it differently. So I think a lot of it has to do with that. And, you know, all the fact is, you know, with Chelsea, I mean, they've never been in a situation like this. Yeah. Jose Mourinho's scrambling, let's face it here, and he's picking a fight with his players, which he has the right to, by the way. I had no problems with him leaving certain players, you know, behind and not starting the likes of Hazard. And, you know, he's done it over time. He has that right. But the bottom line is, and Jason, you and I know that because we've seen them here in the preseason. I've commentated some games, even against that Red Bull 2 game. I mean, you know, people say, well, it's a friendly. They don't take it seriously. But you could see some problems here. Look, the bottom line with Chelsea is that Jose Mourinho did not prepare his team properly for the season. Because at first, in the first couple of weeks, we said, well, Hazard hasn't been playing well, Cesc Fabregas. You know, this is not just one, two, or three players not performing. This is almost the entire Chelsea team that's not performing. And there's only one reason for that early in the season is that somewhere out there, Jose Mourinho did not get it right in terms of preparing his team.
Yeah, you know, like the overarching discussion is, well, England is bad in Europe or England is bad in the Champions League. And I guess that's true, but I think it's important, as you've done, to sort of pick out these individual cases. Chelsea's problems are these problems, and they've obviously been there for the entire beginning of their season. Arsenal's problems are Arsenal. Those are not new Arsenal problems. They're just they're the same ones, and we're seeing them again in the Champions League, Yanish.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with Arsenal, it's just simple. I mean, you know, Arsene Wenger can tell us all he wants. You know, he believes in his players. By the way, I would have loved to play for Arsenal when I was a player because, you know, one thing is he would love his players to a fault, right? I mean, you know, how long, you know, you saw Diaby, you know, somebody like Flamini scores two goals but never plays and stays there. Nothing's asked of him, right? You know, remember they still have Thomas Rosicki. How long has Rosicki been there, injured or not? Yeah, he'll pop in or pop out. You know, some are out there for a game and people will get excited again and he won't play again. So I don't think these players at Arsenal are challenged. I mean, they feel comfortable because they know that the changes won't be made. And you know, I don't even want to go back to that, to the center of the midfield and even the back. You know, Arsenal continues to neglect the needs they have. You know, everybody's talking about, you know, the problem at forward. And yes, one exists there. There's no questions about that. But the same problem. So look at this. Look how simple it can be. Look at Manchester United. I mean, we can agree or not, right? If they're still playing great. They're not playing great. No. They're in the top of the table in the Premier League, but they're not doing anything special. But look, for the last two or three years, what have we been saying, right? They have an issue when Scholes left. They have an issue in the center of the pitch. So what do? You know, they've had Carrick, who's been wonderful for him, but that's all they had, right? When he wasn't in the side last 2 years, we were complaining, how come Manchester United doesn't do it? Well, they've done it. They won and got Bastian Schweinsteiger, and they've got Schneiderlin. So between Carrick, Schweinsteiger, and Schneiderlin, they have such a core, central core, that we almost forget that still in the back they have issues, which, by the way, Manchester United still hasn't addressed, in my opinion. But that key part of the pitch has been addressed. We've asked this of Manchester United. They've done it. Arsenal continues to do that. They are a naive team that gets you excited because of their talent from time to time, but long term is a team that's not going to be winning the major trophies.
Yeah, you know, look, maybe Arsenal is just snake bitten or something. I mean, look, I don't know if it's the right thing to do to start David Ospina in that match necessarily, Giannis, but clearly, in retrospect, we're all going to throw criticism Arsene Wenger's way because Ospina was a major part of them losing that game with that ridiculous own goal.
Yeah, and he's done it already with Cech. He's rested him. I think it's hindsight, but this was a big game. No questions about that. And I think early in the season, when things aren't settled, you still go with your best starting 11. And I think they were looking, you know, they have a pretty big game on the weekend, right? Why can't I remember who they're playing?
I'll find it for you, Anish. It's not in my head right now either because we're still focused on the Champions League, but I will...
Right, but I mean, you know, I do believe...
Oh, Man United.
Man United. And I can't imagine that was the reason for not starting, you know, Cech. I think he's just trying to keep Ospina happy for God knows only what reason. You have a player like Cech. Goalkeepers, when healthy, I think you need to have them there. Never mind that, but I mean, look, Petr Cech is still establishing himself at Arsenal in terms of, you know, that psychology of kind of understanding the pluses and minuses of the back four in front of him. So I don't get it. And even if there's no mistake, I would have said the same thing, right? It doesn't matter. For me, Petr Cech needs to play because he's new to the team and you want to establish that back four or back five. That's always been a problem for Arsenal with him in the lineup. So, look, I think they thought that they're going to beat Olympiacos. I think they've been paired with them for something like four times in the last 7 years with Olympiacos. The home side usually gets a result, and I think they took it for granted. I really do think that they thought no matter what they throw out there, they were going to beat Olympiacos and get ready for Manchester United and all that good stuff. But it's a mistake that's going to be costly because we all know that they have Bayern Munich back-to-back coming right now. And look, barring a miracle, I don't know if if it's going to be all that easy for them coming out of this group.
Yeah, they've lost to Olympiacos and Dinamo Zagreb, and they're not supposed to lose to those teams. And now it's obviously a major challenge.
Jason, I mean, you just said it right there. This is Arsenal. They've lost these two games. That no matter what you think the reason for it was, there's no possibility that Arsenal should be losing to both Dinamo Zagreb and Olympiacos. Mm-hmm. Just no matter what the reasons are, just too good of a club, spending way too much money. You know, if you look at their, you know, the wages and all that, that should not be happening. And I don't necessarily think that we go, well, what's happening with the British teams? This, that, or the other. None of that. In terms of Arsenal, that goes out the window. That right there, even if there was the worst formation or whatever you want to say, they've got to win both games, at the very least one.
I mean, let's look at Barcelona. Of course, Barcelona is a league ahead of Arsenal in terms of where they sit right now. Barcelona is one of the top teams in the world, but they've lost Lionel Messi. They're dealing with that. They end up falling behind against Bayer Leverkusen. They found a way to win. That doesn't mean that everything's great necessarily, Giannis, and you can certainly give us an impression of where Barcelona sits having to deal without Messi, and now Iniesta's injured as well. But they found a way to do that, especially at home.
Yes, they have. I mean, there's always a little bit of luck. I mean, 1-2 punch, right? Couple of minutes, they got it right. They didn't look right. There are issues over there, of course, because, you can look at Barcelona. Here's the deal about Barcelona and Leo Messi. Look, I mean, you're always going to mess a player like this. But if you have in your squad, if you have in your team, Luis Suarez and Neymar, the front three, we're talking attacking, and you can't cope with that, then you don't, you know, you don't belong in La Liga or Champions League. I mean, imagine, you still have Luis Suarez and Neymar. That should be enough. They should be really, I don't want to say no talk about Leo Messi, because of course he's so important, you know, in everything that we do in this sport. But they have so much that they should be able to sustain that in the time, for the time being. The problem with Barcelona is that even with Leo Messi, if you look at, you know, their bench and all that, they are very thin in depth and in quality coming off the bench. Because remember, Rafinha's out for the season as well. So when you look at them, I would this would be a good time to perhaps take advantage of that, because really I don't think that Barcelona have players coming off the bench that can change the game the way normally, you know, you think of Barcelona playing coming off the bench. You know, they have to get themselves in a good position in La Liga and Champions League until January, which I think they will do that, because of course they're going to have, you know, everybody's talking about Arda Turan, but they also have Aleix Vidal, whom I love, is a great player, you know, that came over from, was it Sevilla, I think, and you know, can play right back and right mid, you know, a little bit of a winger as well. But Barcelona has an issue past Leo Messi, because that's not the sort of depth that we're used to coming off the bench. Mm.
So there you go. All right, so we've got Barcelona winners, Arsenal losers, Chelsea. Let's come to Chelsea, and you sort of addressed, again, their problems to start. Mourinho scrambling here, and more than the, what the issues are in the team, and again, whether or not they prepared properly. What is it about Jose Mourinho? I mean, again, the narratives are easy because they feel so right, Janusz, and in this case, it's Mourinho getting that itch again and not necessarily being comfortable where he is, even though he made this whole to-do about coming back to Chelsea, and this is the club that he loves, and he won a title, but it feels wrong. It feels like it's slipping away.
Yeah, I mean, look, again, I mean, when you're on top, you can be like Jose Mourinho. That's the way he is. You know, it's hard to believe how much of it's a game for him, you know, within the game, and how much of it is true. But as I said before, there's not a problem in challenging your players. You know what I mean? So what he's done, I can understand on surface, but, you know, a lot of times I think he went to it a little bit too early, didn't trust this place. What he's doing with John Terry, I can't comprehend, right, to be quite honest with you. I can't. Here's a player that's his captain, that he loved, that he played every minute of it, and he's a scapegoat there, because, I mean, Zuma's come in and played well, but in between him and Cahill, there's no difference. At the time of that switch, to me, there was no difference. I didn't see anything in Gary Cahill that he's done better than John Terry. So for a captain, for such an important figure, to point, you know, straight to him almost immediately, that to me is not a good move. Everybody says the players love him. 11 players love him. The rest don't. You know, that's the way it is. The ones that play always will love him. So I think he started this fight. I think, you know, as I said, preparation for me, it's important. I think he was short last season, as he's always is with any team that he manages, of course, because he only plays 13, 14 players. The bottom line is that summer, even without a major competition, which was the case for his team, right? Copa America probably played a little bit of a role, but it's not enough sometimes to recover. And I think you have a team of some players a little bit older that are struggling right now. Then you have the Diego Costa situation. First and foremost, I mean, the fight he picked with Eva Canedo is just stupid.
Yeah.
And he's paying the price for it because of everything else that has happened, right? Because there he is, I know everything about the game and you don't know. Even in that situation, if he knew, and he actually expected Eva Canedo or anybody to even think about that when she's being called by the referee, if he truly, truly knew that at that second, he should have foreseen that this is going to happen and jump on Eva Carneiro's back and not allow her to go. You know what I mean? Mm. If he's that smart, if he's such a smart person, and he expects that from people to understand what happened. So that's a fight that he's picked that was wrong. You know, you have Costa that's going crazy, and that's absolutely not right. These two, of course, are a match because they're identical. You know, you look at Costa, what happened in that, you know, I mean, I don't have time for the player like this. I really don't, because for me, Costa, and he actually played well in this last game, you know, I mean, probably one of the few that played well for Chelsea against Porto. But if you have a player that goes on the pitch every game with an intent to send a player off, come on, you know what I mean? I don't want to be, you know, the goody two-shoe here, you know what I mean? Because I know how the game is played. But I just don't have I don't have time for a player like this. That you know, he does it every game.
It's interesting, Giannis. It almost feels a little Sid and Nancy, but with Diego Costa and Mourinho, that they are feeding each other's destructive sort of behaviors.
Absolutely, and at any time, even if things are going well, but especially right now, you don't want any sort of drama that's outside of the game, right? You want the concentration. You want the team to understand what's at stake. You know that, you know, you're struggling a little bit, which happens to everyone. I mean, you know, it's not that it can't happen to Chelsea, but you don't want to have any of the side conversations. And you know, quite frankly, Mourinho fuels them for no reason whatsoever. This is the time that he needs to step away from the game and let his team play a little bit. I mean, it's being said that he protects his players by doing it. I think that at this moment, he's putting more pressure on his players than actually protecting them.
All right, so we've got Chelsea struggling as they lose in Portugal. Bayern Munich 5-0 over Dinamo Zagreb. So the team that Arsenal couldn't beat, Bayern Munich takes apart 5-0. And Robert Lewandowski, Janusz, just I don't know, how do we possibly sum up the form of Robert Lewandowski right now?
Well, we don't. I mean, he's been doing this for a couple of years now, right? I mean, this is nothing new. I mean, I'm a little bit biased, obviously, you know, because he comes from the country where I was born.
Right.
But I mean, we all knew this. We've seen it in Borussia Dortmund. He's a wonderful, wonderful striker. You know, we've seen a lot of reports, so I'm not going to be too original in a sense. I think Rafa Honigstein wrote an article. It's right. I mean, the system right now suits him. And, you know, it is true, by the way, that you know, even though Rafa said it, that may not be the total truth, but it is true that there's a time that you know, Pep Guardiola, of course, likes the false nine. He's not in the frame of mind where he has a striker, you know, the true number nine, right? Even in Barcelona, he had one, remember, Zlatan. You remember how quickly he got rid of him, right? For a number of reasons, not just that. But I think, you know, he doesn't often know what to do with Thomas Muller when everybody's healthy, right? Remember when under Jupp Heynckes with Eitel, Bayern was perfect at that time. You know, that would have been a good time for any center forward, right? Because Bayern Munich are known for them. Remember Mario Gomez was excellent. Miro Klose was excellent, right? Mandzukic was excellent. And Pep got rid of Mandzukic as well. But in that system, you had wide players that serviced the central strikers. Same thing happened to Lewandowski at Dortmund. You know, he was always being serviced with Robin and Ribery when they play. You know, they're right. Whatever you read, it's right. I mean, he's not going to get that sort of service. So I think he's benefiting from that. There may have been a little bit of a doubt early on in the season. Remember, Lewandowski doesn't always start, which he's not used to, because I think Pep has some issues in that position and how to play, because let's not forget, Pep Guardiola came to Bayern Munich to give them a different look from that of the treble-winning Jupp Heynckes team for the future. I'm not necessarily sure if that's working, but I think I'm glad that Robert Lewandowski is taking advantage, kind of saying to Pep, look, if you keep it simple, this is how we can play. This is the message that I really think that Lewandowski is sending out there. I'm not sure necessarily to Guardiola, but he's shown, like, if I get the service, I will always deliver. And he does.
Yep, he sure has. Many, many goals over the course of his career, but on absolute fire right now. All right, let's look ahead a little bit to today, Janusz. You know, obviously, we talked about the English teams off the top there. You've got both Manchester teams in action today. Manchester United versus Wolfsburg, Gladbach hosting Manchester City. A little bit more desperation for the citizens right now.
Well, yes, because I think, you know, desperation in a sense, what's happening to them overall. You know, I think, you know, if you look at United, they're playing a German opposition too, Wolfsburg, right? I mean, it's not all that rosy either because they lost the first game. So it's a little bit of pressure, must win, but it's at home and they're the top of the league. So that will be a little bit easier for them. But for Manchester City, you know, it's just funny because I look at that team, how they started. I kind of always thought and knew that, you know, this is going to turn a little bit on them, but I didn't see this collapse. But look, I don't care how big a team is. If you don't have some key players, I think you're going to suffer. And you're seeing that with Manchester City. David Silva has been a big loss. I think the way Kompany has started, of course, and Mangala, who's finally, remember, Mangala was under tremendous amount of pressure last year. It took him a long, long time to kind of adjust to the Premier League. But I think those two finally have. And all of a sudden, you have two players in the heart of defense that are not there. Hart wasn't playing again, right? You know, similar situation there. There's a bit of a knock, you know, in terms of injury with him, but Willie Caballero's been struggling, as we know it. Kind of same situation as Ospina in the last, who they lose to against Spurs, I think, 4-1.
Yes.
So, you know, so you're taking three players, you know, that are so important, goalkeeper, two center backs, and you look at, you know, not playing without Silva. I don't want to overthink it. I really think that sometimes it's that simple, right, Jason? I mean, any team that you look, even the teams that, you know, you and I played, even if it's, you know, playing with friends, I mean, you always know who the go-to guys are. Yeah. When you struggle, you know who to find that may be able to bring you a back in the game. And I think some of it you have to put to that. But psychology plays a big role for me. You know, Pellegrini, we go from liking him to kind of firing him the next day. There's got to be his softness sometimes as a person, I think, as a manager. His softness sometimes comes through the team, because to get that sort of response or non-response against Spurs, that's mind-boggling to me.
Yeah.
There's got to be a bigger issue in you know, I want to say him being a nice man, kind of quiet man, which is okay. Not everybody has to be the super vocal leader or a cheerleader. But that mentality has to come from within. And I have to say, you know, after the lack of effort I saw against Spurs, I mean, I don't know if Pellegrini is capable of stomping his foot and, you know, doing sort of what Mourinho is trying to do.
It's interesting, because that's why he was brought in to replace Roberto Mancini. And, you know, by the way, I think my brain somehow switched Manchester United to a winner in their first game. Obviously, they didn't. They lost to PSV Eindhoven. So they're in a desperate situation, as you said. Reasonably desperate. Wolfsburg's going to be tough. But if Pellegrini is not the guy, then, you know, are we on the verge of another switch for Manchester City? They have to go find somebody. I mean, are they going to make a run for Klopp again? Are they going to what can they possibly do?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what they're going to do in the meantime, because I don't know, you know, yeah, Klopp could be one. Obviously, you know, let's talk about Liverpool, let's talk about him. You know, I mean, I think ideally, as you hear, I think he would want to wait for Bayern Munich to open up. But, you know, sometimes you force into the situation, because if indeed, say, Manchester City comes in, more so than Liverpool, that'll be a lot more enticing. You know, I hate to say that with Liverpool, because I have a soft spot for them, but obviously Manchester City is going to be a lot more enticing in terms of what you can do and how much you can buy. You know, he may, because look, you know, Pellegrini, I mean, if they go out again like this, I mean, you're going to have to start thinking about making a decision. As I said, I mean, when you had Mancini, he was tough. He wasn't necessarily, you know, very, very loud, but I think you need a little bit of a cheerleader sometimes, you know what I mean? Sometimes you do need somebody out there that will motivate you. You know, their personality may just do it, you know what I mean? So I wouldn't be shocked to see that. Look, I mean, if City lose to Mönchengladbach, you know, look, I mean, no English team has ever beaten Gladbach in Germany. You know, I read some notes, you know, a long, long time ago. Actually, Gladbach knocked out Manchester City from Europa League, just so you know. But that's too long ago to even bring it here. But I think I wouldn't be shocked to see a change at City, because it's just, you know, it would be another failure in Europe. You know, you having a team that, you know, it's not collapsing yet, but after that perfect start, what was it, 5 games in Premier League, yeah, with, you know, perfect record, no goals conceded. You're seeing not just losses, but the sort of effort against Spurs. I mean, that team was dead. You know, there's nothing or nobody, no leadership on the field and no leadership off the field to change that. Then you got to kind of, all the old stuff comes back, right? Because the questions went away because of that perfect start. But now people are saying, okay, you know, is this sustainable? Obviously, you know, Pellegrini hasn't been able to sustain any of that, and especially in the Champions League, which is, you know, it's got to be a priority for Manchester City. Of course they want to get back and win the Premier League, but they've done it already. I mean, this team spent money and is built to be the best in the world. I mean, I imagine that this is the idea of the ownership that's spending that money, that they want to get the name of Manchester City globally to be on par with that of Manchester United, maybe the old teams of Liverpool, Real Madrid, and Barcelona. And until they do something special in that competition, you know, that's not going to happen. I'm not even sure if it's ever going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. So you know, you look at this Manchester City, who's been continuously failing in Champions League. And, you know, remember in the beginning we were sort of saying the first year or two, well, you know, they're paying the price because they don't have the experience in Europe. Well, how long are we going to be saying that? I mean, they've been in Europe now for 4 or 5 years, and they've spent more money than anybody. So I wouldn't be shocked if they were to lose in Gladbach. I think, you know, there should be some panic there for sure.
Yeah, it's again, the overarching narrative is, oh, what's wrong with English teams? But again, I think this is individually, each one of these teams has a very specific situation that is affecting them.
Jason, just quickly here, and the bottom line, you know, because we have this little bit of a narrative, right, on this side of the pond against the other side of the pond, and I, you know, I'm not really in that fight for the most part. You know, it's a friendly banter in some way. But, you know, there is always, and it doesn't have to be America. This is what people don't understand, because I come from Europe, and there is always, you play against English team, you want to beat them for those reasons. Yeah. And those reasons are sometimes just what we often talk about. It's, you know, we are the best. Premier League is the best. England, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I know that there's a lot of English folks, you know, people that we know in the media, they know that that's not the case. But if you go, you know, how else you explain Dinamo Zagreb, right? I mean, it's impossible otherwise. You know, teams in Europe get up for English team that little bit of extra.
It's
just the bottom line.
Very, very, very astute point. Janis Mihalik, go follow him on Twitter. Janis Mihalik is one of the best broadcasters out there. I love having you on the show, Janis. Thanks so much for the insight. And I'm sure we'll be talking to you through the rest of the Champions League campaign.
Thanks, Jason, and I hope you have awesome places to go on your vacation.
I appreciate
and
it.
We'll be listening to you on Sirius Radio soon enough.
There you go. You can also hear Janis on
Sirius. And thanks to World Soccer Talk, of course, because you know I'm a big fan.
Absolutely. There goes Janis Mihalik. Good stuff from him. When we come back, David Amoyel will shift down to Italy and talk about Serie A, and also there's Italian teams in the Champions League as well. Soccer Morning, worldsoccertalk.com. Be right back. When it comes to the USA against Mexico, this game's different. As Michael Bradley puts it, the passion, the colors, the respect, the hate. Soccer Morning listeners, I'd like to invite you to join me and Jared Dubois this Saturday for the USA versus Mexico broadcast on Rabble.tv at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Pacific. With Rabble, the concept is simple. All you have to do is tune into the USA versus Mexico game on TV, press the mute button, and then head on over to Rabble.tv to listen to me and Jared on your desktop, through your iOS Android app, or through your mobile browser. Plus, before or during the game, you can join in by posting your questions or observations in the comments section. Or why don't you create your own broadcast, call one of your team's games. It's easy. Sign up for free today. Try it out. Join me and Jared this Saturday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern for the USA versus Mexico on Rabble.tv, where it's your team and your call.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
All right, we are back on Soccer Morning. We're going to turn now to Italy, Serie A, Italian leagues, and the Italian teams in the Champions League, rather, with the man who has more copycat accounts than anyone else I know, David Amoyel. What is that all about, David?
It's great to be on. Thanks for having me, and especially for having me after such a great guest. So I'm excited to be here.
Yes, David on Twitter is David Moyal. Accept no substitutions. AMOYAL. All right, David. Let's we did Champions League with Janis. I think it's easy to just roll into Italy and their Champions League fortunes. For obviously, Juve's got Sevilla today. We can come to that. But Roma in a wider context, both what happened yesterday against Bate Borisov, but in general the state of Roma's campaign so far. Where are we? Because this is the grand project of Italian football.
I agree. I think Roma this season, they have a great opportunity to win the league. Last time we talked, we discussed how Juve has taken a step back to take two forward. Got rid of a lot of veterans, brought in some younger players that they need to assimilate. I didn't expect Juve to get off to such a bad start, but I certainly expected them to not be running out of the gate either. So Roma, has a great opportunity to win the league title. They've been off to an okay start, nothing great. I think they've been really hurt by injuries now. Dzeko, I think, was a superb signing for them. Even if he hasn't scored really much, he really brings a lot to the table. They haven't had a central striker like that in years. I think Roma, too, saw Juve taking a step back, and they made some sacrifices on the market. They brought in Salah, who was sensational at Fiorentina. They decided to keep Iturbe. After all, they sold some players that weren't really on their squad last season, and Bertolacci and Romagnoli, and they kind of financed their acquisitions by that. So compared to years past where they lost key players on the team and they had to replace them, they were playing with house money, essentially. So not off to a great start in Serie A. And yesterday, I thought it was very disappointing that we were down 3-0 against Bate, who had really struggled against Leverkusen. They had only been out of their half of the pitch three times in that match. So certainly very disappointing yesterday.
So let's turn now to Juve. As you talked about, not coming out of the gates that strong, an expected step back. But what does this mean for their Champions League campaign, building off of what they managed to do last year as a finalist?
Well, what's interesting with Juve is, up until last season, there was a perception, which I think was based a lot in reality, that they struggled in Europe and were great in Italy. Last season, they won the league title, but they didn't, get anywhere near as close to the number of points they had in the preceding season, but they made it to the Champions League final. I think even the most optimistic Juve fan was very happy with that. And this season, they really struggled in Serie A, and they had that huge win in Manchester against City. So it seems like tables have a little bit turned for Juve. Allegri, the coach they brought from Milan, really changed their mentality to try to win in Europe more. But now it may have gone a little bit too far. In Serie A, they certainly have struggled. There were a couple of matches where I think the result was a little bit deceiving against Udinese and Frosinone. They only collected 1 point at home, but they had an inordinate amount of shots on goal, didn't go through. But there's definitely reasons to be concerned about Juve. I think they need a win tonight just for the team morale, but they really need to get back on track in Serie A. If they don't win the title, so be it. They've won four in a row, but they really cannot afford to be out of the Champions League next season.
Yeah, and we're going to come to that. Obviously, Juventus starting well in the Champions League with that win away to Manchester City. Maybe you don't expect that those points, so they're okay. They need to beat Sevilla, as you said. Maybe for confidence morale. And Robert in Southern California has asked on Twitter who you see making the Champions League spots. Now that's a long season. There's a long way to go. David, we don't know how things are going to play out in terms of injuries and signings and everything else. But Juve has to be in that group to maintain. I mean, this what happens, of course, with these big clubs is you need that revenue. You need the Champions League money to keep yourself going with the same sort of momentum. Otherwise, you take a massive step back. So when you look at the potential Champions League qualifiers, Juventus is going to be trying to get there. But who do you have right now if you had to pick it?
It's a great question, and I appreciate the person tweeting it in. I would say there's going to be a group of teams. You're going to have Roma, Napoli. To me, look like two teams that will definitely be competing for that. Then I think Juve, you know, once they get their injured players back, and Khedira is finally going to be back. He's been out. He got an injury in the preseason. He's going to start today. So I think Juve, once they get their injured players back and once they start integrating some of their new players, I think they, you know, it's still early enough in the season that they can contend. Then we saw Inter off to a very good start. You know, they lost pretty heavily against Fiorentina, but they won their first five matches. Maybe not in brilliant fashion, but, you know, what I've learned is sometimes you get those ugly wins. They, you know, it's just as many points as when you win 5-0. So I think Inter is going to be in the mix with that. And then I think, you know, there's a growing middle class of teams in Italy that's really fascinating. I think Fiorentina really deserves a lot of credit. This summer, you know, there was so much drama with Salah going on. You also see two of their former stars, Quadrado and Jovetic, who are doing, you know, really well for Juve. In Inter, you add all that up, and Fiorentina is doing really, really well. Their coach that they hired, Paolo Sosa, has been doing very well for them. So I think, you know, they're going to be in the conversation for that as well. I think Lazio, too, is a key team to watch as well. And you never know. There could be a spoiler like Torino, who's a team that's gaining a lot of attention because of the way they play. So I think there's really this interesting growing middle class of teams in Italy, and I'm going to write about that later this week. And there's also Sassuolo, who's a team that plays a lot of Italian players in offensive style. Their big star is Domenico Berardi, who was really a player to watch. So I think it's going to be a really fascinating season in Serie A. There's really a lot of parity. It kind of reminds me a little bit of what we see with the NFL right now. Not a dominating team, but a lot of good teams competing.
Yeah, it seems as though there is sort of this this group of teams who are all relatively close together, and obviously with Juventus having taken a step back, I mean from an outsider's perspective, not necessarily invested all that much in Serie A, I can say that I think it would probably be good to have a new champion this season. Speaking of Champions League spots, David, so much being made of the English teams struggling in the Champions League so far in the group stages, not a win among them. Games today for Manchester United, Manchester City, as they try to get right. There's a little bit of talk about you know, Italy maybe getting a spot back. Is that something that you see coming down the pipe, and how does that benefit the league? Obviously, massively.
It would definitely financially be a big benefit. You know, I think Italy, I'm not a huge expert on coefficient, but yeah, Italy's competing with England for that spot. It would really help for Roma to get out of their group. Despite yesterday's loss, it's not a very difficult group. I think they're really going to be competing with Bayer Leverkusen after Barcelona to get out of the group. So despite yesterday, I think they can still make it. I think, you know, Italy really could use the teams in the Europa League to do well. For the second season in a row, we saw Lazio get eliminated in the preliminary round. That happened to Napoli the previous season. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like a hangover for those teams. I think it's never easy to be in the Europa League when you thought you'd be in the Champions League. But I look at the teams that are in the Europa League, Fiorentina could do well. So I think, you know, it'd be great for the league. I think everyone in Italy started giving more importance to the Europa League once they decided that if you win it, you make it to the Champions League. So I think this could be the season that we see a fourth place being added to Italy. And I think what would really help is making the third place team an automatic qualifier to the group stage, because like I mentioned, both Lazio and Napoli have been eliminated in that round in the past 2 years.
Mm. All right, so we've got an interesting beginning to this season. You know, again, Juventus four championships in a row, four Scudettos in a row. Now they're obviously trying to rebuild after seeing some major figures leave. Fiorentina top of the table at the moment. Let's shed some praise on the teams that have overachieved so far in 2015, David. Again, it's a long season, lots of games to go, only six played. But if you had to take a team that you're a little surprised to see doing so well, or if you want to flip it around, teams that are obviously disappointing, that would be who is that as well?
Well, I think there's we talked a little bit about Fiorentina, Sassuolo, and Torino. I think Torino's really a fascinating team. You know, they sold Darmian to Manchester United, and he's kind of changing a little bit the perception that former Serie A players struggle in the Premier League. Really been sensational. Everyone that followed him closely with Italy and Torino is not a surprise. So Torino, you know, they lost him. They reinvested the money they received for him very well. They got this midfielder, Bazzelli, who used to be on Atalanta, who's been off the sensational start for them. They kept their defense, their two center backs, Glick and Maksimovic. Maksimovic has been hurt. He's a very good player. So they're a very interesting team. They have veterans up front. They have Pagliarella and Maxi Lopez, you know, the good strikers. So Torino, you know, in years past, they had sold Cerchi and Immobile, and they have kind of been bust since they left Torino. I think Torino really has one of the best coaches in Serie A, Giampiero Ventura. He's kind of an old school Italian coach who really gets the most out of his players. So I think, you know, for a casual Serie A observer, someone who maybe would like to try a new team on FIFA that might be fun to use, I would recommend Torino.
All right, David, the state of, and I always do this, I'm a big picture guy, I can't help it, the state of Italian football. We've talked about the Champions League spot, that would obviously be a big benefit financially, but in terms of the general finances, we've seen, you know, seen struggles in clubs with major problems and disappearing, and obviously we know infrastructure in Italy has long lagged behind the rest of Europe. Clubs trying to make, I mean, Juventus opening up their beautiful new building a couple years ago. Roma's trying to get theirs done. Where do things stand in a general sense in Italy trying to maintain, you know, some parity with some of the best leagues in the continent?
It's a really great question, and it's a complicated answer. I would say, you know, clubs in Italy have historically found very good formulas to acquire players, you know. The formula of buying, getting a player on loan with option to buy. And then now we see some new two-year loan deals with forced option to buy that Italian clubs trademarked. And now other clubs, Bayern, use that formula to acquire Koeman from Juve. So I think, you know, there's been a lot of creative accounting, for lack of a better word. And it's possible that it's going to come back to bite some of these clubs. Inter had really a great summer in the transfer market. They acquired a lot of really good players, but they really put, it's not that they bought them outright. They bought them on loans with options to buy. They're kind of basically kicking the can down the road for when they have to pay these players. So I think, you know, if they don't make the Champions League next season, they might be in big trouble. So it'll be interesting to see what happened there. There's some other clubs who are very fiscally responsible. I think Napoli, they've always turned a profit under their president, De Laurentiis, who's from the family of the movie producers. They've been a very conservative club financially. I think it's really benefited. But they're really more the exception rather than the rule. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Milan if this deal with this mysterious Mr. B goes through. There seems to be really a lot of issues going on with that. They certainly could use an influx of cash there. The problem is the stadiums. There's really not many clubs who are really making an effort to build new stadiums. Right now it's really only Juve and Udinese that have state-of-the-art stadiums. So I think there's still some concerns with the finances. I think getting that extra Champions League spot, though, would help Italian soccer as a whole financially.
You know, obviously, when I reference clubs going, you know, clubs disappearing or having to be relegated due to financial, we would talk about Parma and the situation at Parma. As long as that's not going to create a domino effect across Italian football, I imagine it can be contained. But has Italian football done a good job of trying to learn lessons from what's happened?
Yes and no. I think, you know, the Parma one was shocking to a lot of people because it's a club that people know outside of Italy. But this is somewhat fairly common in Italy. My hometown team, who Alexi Lalas used to play for, you know, went bankrupt and had to start over from the fourth division. This does happen, not saying frequently, but it does happen here and there. I think, you know, in Italy, they're trying. I think the Parma thing might have been, you know, a moment where maybe clubs are going to change that attitude. I think the fact that now there's so much looking at what's going on with Milan and this deal with Mr. B is a sign that they don't want another Parma to happen. But I still have a little bit of concerns about that. I think, you know, Italy as a whole needs to make a commitment to be a little bit more transparent financially with the clubs.
When we talk about AC Milan, you did mention to me before we came on the air that Kevin Prince Boateng may be making a return to AC Milan. We know about Mario Balotelli and the continued struggle to figure out his talent and how to make it come good. Where do things stand right now with AC Milan?
To me, Milan, good or bad, is always the most fascinating club in Italy. They're definitely the most entertaining, and I think they're the most fun club to write about. So I think, you know, this season, what was very positive about Milan is they finally spent a lot of money in the summer. They were the club that spent the most net sales-wise, as Wenger would say. So they spend the money. I think the jury's still out if they spent the money well, but it's certainly an improvement from getting guys on loans and free transfers. Balotelli so far has been playing pretty well for them. I think there's a little less pressure because he's not expected to be the savior and a full-time starter. And I think they're kind of taking the same approach with Kevin Prince Boateng. He's back training with the team today. He can't sign with them until January. He's still under contract with Schalke, but it looks almost sure that he'll be a Milan player. His agent is someone that works a lot with Milan, so I think he'll be part of the team. You know, he had been linked to MLS for a little bit, but he's been in Milan a lot. So I think he'll join the team in January. Milan, though, will continue to be really an enigma. To me, you know, three coaches later, I don't see a big improvement from Allegri. I think Mihailovic is a very good coach. Let's see, though, if the personnel that they spent a lot of money on this summer can really elevate the team, though.
David, since I have you very quickly before I let you go, looking at the list of games for this weekend, if you had to pick one, where should people turn their attention?
I think Milan-Napoli is going to be a great match. Napoli had a great performance against Juve. I'm a huge fan of their coach, Sarri, who was at Empoli before. I think what we saw against Juve was really the blueprint of what his teams do. His teams play very compact. They put a lot of pressure on the opposing team, and the other team has possession, and they're just very creative offensively. I think Higuain has been an absolute joy to watch. I have to say, who the best player in Serie A right now, I would probably pick him. And Insigne is having really a strong comeback from his injury. Milan, you know, is going to be desperate for points. Their executive director, Galliani, already went to the training session yesterday to tell the team that they really need to do better after all the investment. So that's the game that I'm really going to be watching for. It's the late Sunday game. So I think that's going to be a really good one.
Gonzalo Higuain, the one of the best players in Italy at the moment, and yet can't get into the Argentinian national team. David Amoyal on the Soccer Morning with us talking Italy. David, great stuff as always. I'm sure we'll be talking to you very soon about developments in Italy, both Champions League and within the league. Appreciate the time.
Great. Thank you so much. And just one last thing. You know, we're starting to cover a lot more MLS on our website. We're really trying to introduce the league. We have a lot of readers, you know, in Europe, outside of the U.S. So if any of the listeners are interested in contributing, please contact me. My Twitter account is my email address. I'm sure you're not contacting one of my impersonators, but contact me, and I'd be very happy to talk to you
there
about
you go.
It. So thanks again, Jason, for having me on.
You're welcome, Dave. David Amoyal, A-M-O-Y-A-L, on Twitter, all together. You'll figure it out. Gianluca DiMarzio is the website. As David said, they're covering MLS. More and more. All right, here's an opportunity for us to go ahead and step aside and get back on the air and talk to you guys. If I can just find what I'm looking for on my little button thing here. Phone lines will be open for however long they need to be. So call us up. Soccer Morning, worldsoccertalk.com. Be right back.
Don't throw stones at me.
Finds me.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
Here we are back on Soccer Morning, Wednesday edition of the program. All right, here's what I need to tell you about tomorrow, Friday, and Monday. I'm going on a bit of a vacation. Yes, I'm stepping aside for a couple of days. Don't worry, though. Jonathan Tannenwald from Philly.com is going to be filling in. He's going to do an excellent job. But you need to be aware that the web show, this program, WorldSoccerTalk.com, during Jonathan's stay, will move to 10 a.m. Eastern time. Okay, just adjust your alarms and your notices accordingly. It's only 1 hour, not a big deal. Jonathan Tannenwald filling in Soccer Morning, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Thursday, Friday, Monday. I will return on Tuesday, October 8th. Right. Yes. So I'm stepping away to celebrate my birthday, but I'll come back ready to go, all fired up. And I've been asked, man. So Giannis is sort of making fun of me a little bit there when we had him on the show about, you know, having this job and needing a vacation. Of course, he's just giving me a hard time. We all need vacations no matter what we do. But he said something interesting about, you know, I said it's difficult to step away. And I've already had that discussion with my significant other about being able to put the phone down during my vacation. I've already been told you won't be able to survive without your phone. You won't be able to survive without checking Twitter and soccer news every 5 minutes. And you know what? She might be slightly right. And it's going to be difficult. It's going to be hard. It's going to be like taking a pacifier away from an infant. Why would you do that? If it makes them happy, let them be happy. That's what I'm saying. All right. Big game tonight. PPL Park, Chester, Pennsylvania. A crowd of 5,000 might be on hand. I don't know. Mike in Philly, what's going on?
A little more than 5,000. Not a sellout. It's not looking like a sellout, but I think we'll match what they had last year, which honestly was probably the best. I've been to, I think, every game at PPL Park, and last year's Open Cup final was hands down the best atmosphere there.
Yeah.
Loudest it's ever been, and I expect tonight to be the same. I'm thinking 15,000 to 16,000.
Okay, well, look, that's strong. That's pretty strong. For a Wednesday night, and you know what? How's the weather in Philly? Because I know down here in D.C., it's pretty wet.
It's a little rainy. They're saying it's going to stop around 3 o'clock.
Okay.
So it should be fine for game time.
Okay, because Hurricane Joaquin is messing with the weather on the East Coast. My trip is messing with my trip. And I didn't know if you were going to end up having a sort of deluge situation on the banks of the river there for this game, which would obviously dampen the crowd.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, it's a little bit of a disappointment that we can't manage to sell this out. That being said, I'm trying not to worry about it. The River End's completely sold out. Last year's as jam-packed as I've ever seen it. This year's probably going to be the same. It's going to be an amazing atmosphere, regardless of if it's a technical sellout or not.
All right, well,
everyone who's there wants to be there.
Mike, what's interesting about the state of the Philadelphia Union, and I've seen this argument made. I hate this argument. I hate the "we need to lose to get better" argument. I hate it when it's brought up with the national team. I just hate it. I think it's ridiculous. No fan should ever buy into the idea that a loss is better for their team than a win. But I've heard it said, and I'd love to get your response, that if the Union win this cup, if they win the trophy tonight and they beat Sporting Kansas City, it just puts a Band-Aid on something that's a gaping wound. Now, if Octavio Zambrano is coming in, maybe that helps. But do you buy into the notion that winning only gives the current regime, more ability to sort of ignore the problems?
To the regime ignoring the problems, yes, I don't think winning tonight will make them worse. I think it will make them better. I think they can use winning the Open Cup and the extra allocation money and the Champions League as a springboard to sort of replicate a little bit of what DC United did. So although it may give the ownership a little bit of a pass, a little bit of an extension, overall, a win tonight, I think, is going to be vastly more helpful than a loss would be.
Okay, fair enough.
That's what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping they get the extra money. I hope Octavio comes in. I hope things start clicking. They got the USL team in Bethlehem starting next year. I think, and I'm one of the front office's biggest critics, I think, but I think this could be a turning point for the franchise. We're not going to go on a wild spending spree, but I think things may start to be turning around. I'm cautiously optimistic there.
Okay.
As far as the game tonight goes, I was wondering what your opinion is, what you're expecting, and it wouldn't be the Union without a goalkeeper controversy. Who do you think Jim Curtin should start in goal? Should it be McCarthy, who played every game in the Open Cup up until now and got the team where they are in the tournament, or should it be Andre Blake, who's obviously the better talent and I think substantially the better keeper?
Well, you got Blake coming off that performance against the Revs, right? So his confidence is bursting. But McCarthy has proven, you know, capable of doing the job, and I think maybe continuity tonight is more important. Maybe having the team feel as though the things that have been successful in this tournament to this point are still the things that can make them successful. In that case, it's McCarthy. I think that in terms of this game overall, I'll be fascinated to know what kind of energy level Sporting Kansas City has. They rested guys on the weekend, partly for this game, but also because they just needed to rest guys. And they managed to get a draw against the Sounders at home. I guess for me, he's just going to go for it. But you know, if there's a crowd and the atmosphere is good, then Philly really does maybe have an advantage there. I think Sporting wins in the end, Mike. My gut says that. But I could see Philadelphia giving them a real difficult time of it. I don't think it's going to come down to keeper, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I don't think it'll come down to keepers. I just think it's funny the Union have another keeper controversy. I'm really hoping the Union can win. It's a one-off game. Obviously, they're one of the worst teams in the league, but it's MLS. Anything can happen. I'm hoping go Union, and let's see what happens tonight. Everyone watches. It's actually on a channel.
It is. It's on a channel. It's on ESPN2. Mike, appreciate the phone call, man. Best of luck to your Union. Thanks. All right, there goes Mike in Philly. Mike has the Philly accent. I love when people who call me from places with known accents actually have said accent, because it feels authentic. Mike feels like an authentic Philly sports fan, a Union fan, living, dying with his teams. Philly sports fans, okay, maybe they're a little notorious for certain things, but they're also notably passionate. I mean, when we talk about some of the craziest sports radio in the country, Philly gets top of that list regularly because their fans are just out there. Fantastic. 646-832-3909. 646-832-3909. A couple of minutes left here on the show. If you want to get in, if you have thoughts on the U.S. Open Cup tonight, Champions League, maybe get some predictions here. Maybe give me a sense of whether or not you think Manchester United can turn it around at home against Wolfsburg, whether or not Manchester City can go to Germany and beat Gladbach. I doubt it. I very seriously doubt it. Whether Juventus can continue their better than league form in the Champions League against Sevilla. I don't think anybody's going to pick Malmo to beat Real Madrid, but wouldn't it be amazing if they did? Wouldn't that be great? We could have like a Swedish themed party on this show when I got back if Malmo could beat Real Madrid today. You got Astana and Galatasaray. I imagine that's the game a lot of people will not be paying much attention to, but it could be interesting. CSKA Moscow and PSV Eindhoven. Eindhoven off the win over Manchester United. They have to go to Moscow and take on CSKA. You have Atletico Madrid, who right now in La Liga are somewhere down 7th place, I think, right now. Does that sound right, Trev? La Liga standings. Let me just Google said standings. Oh, they're in 5th place right now. So Atletico Madrid today against home against Benfica. We'll see how they do, Diego Simeone and company do in that particular match. 646-832-3909. I'm picking both German teams to win. No, I'm not picking. I'm picking Manchester United to win at home. Manchester United to win against Wolfsburg. Gladbach to beat City. Juve to draw with Sevilla, I think. That's where I'll go with that one. Moscow, CSKA Moscow and Eindhoven. I see a draw there. Shakhtar Donetsk and PSG. Let's see if the PSG. And where does Donetsk play their games now? I always forget that they're not anywhere close to Donetsk these days. That they have to play hundreds of miles away because of what is a continuing, ridiculous, disgusting, horrific situation in Ukraine. Just thought I'd throw that in there. Not political commentary. I think we can all agree what's happening in Ukraine is fairly ridiculous. All right. Speaking of U.S. Open Cup final, it is great to have it on ESPN2 tonight. I'm ecstatic that we get an actual major television broadcaster in HD showing this game. I am aware that Taylor Twellman and I think Adrian Healy are going to do this game via remote. So they're going to, not via remote, like, but they're going to do the game remotely, probably from Connecticut. And that's—I don't know that that says anything about the U.S. Open Cup necessarily, or if it's more about ESPN. Giannis, you know, things. Giannis Mihaly came on the show today, and before we got on the air, we were just sort of, you talk about the industry a little bit. And it's an interesting time for the industry. Not that I want to go into some details, and I don't have much to be honest with you. There you go. But if you want the U.S. Open Cup to matter, if you're ready for the U.S. Open Cup to take the next step, you got to watch, and you got to tell other people to watch, and you got to. We've got to get momentum behind this thing. If the U.S. Open Cup is going to take a place among the more important tournaments, the more important competitions, if we want the teams to take it seriously earlier, you need to watch. Got to make this into a big deal. Got to turn this into a game that's got actual interest behind it. I don't remember last year's final very well. I don't. I apologize for that. But I do remember Sporting Kansas City and Seattle at Sporting Park with the penalties and Eddie Johnson. I do remember that game. Eddie in Brooklyn. What's up, man?
Hey, what's good? Just figured I'd bother you one more time before you went on vacation.
Bother me, man. Bother. Go ahead.
Who's the Union fan that called in just before?
Mike from Philly.
All right, so kind of... You know, people saying that they don't want the Union to win because it would mask, like, bigger issues.
Yeah.
It could serve as a turning point because if you remember when DC United were going through the worst season anyone has ever seen, they ended up beating RSL, and people were worried about what they were doing in CONCACAF Champions League, and then they just turned around and had the best, worst, the first anyone has ever seen in the league and actually performed pretty well in CCL. Yeah. So.
And Mike mentioned that as a possibility. I mean, that's got to be the hope. And I think that's why, if you're a Union fan, you want to win the game because guess what? What's the point of the game? To win trophies. Just you don't ever pass up a trophy. That was what I meant when I said I don't believe in it at all. You never pass up a trophy. I would want the United States to win every trophy possible, whether we ever play good soccer or not, Eddie. I don't care. I mean, I don't care. I don't care about good soccer. I care about trophies. First, I mean, if you can get good soccer and trophies, yeah, more power to you. So we'll see what happens with the Union. They could use it as a springboard, definitely.
Yeah, the main reason I'm calling that was Champions League.
Okay.
I noticed there's a new narrative now surrounding Premier League teams.
Yeah.
That apparently that the Premier League is now so competitive that it's draining the Premier League clubs, and that's why they're not performing well in the Champions League.
I don't think that. I mean, I wouldn't buy that for a second. No.
No, I wouldn't either, because then if you're telling me that, then you're telling me that the Premier League wasn't competitive when Chelsea won it. The Premier League wasn't competitive when Manchester United won it. Like,
well,
the Premier League,
I mean,
it's quote unquote always competitive.
Right. Well, it's clear, Eddie, that there's more money in that league now, and that is driving, I guess, improvement of these sides, and it's making it tougher on the top side. But this is also about mismanagement at Manchester United during the Moyes era and the failure to strengthen their team. They finally done so, but now they're still kind of, you know, they're still getting into the Van Gaal era. This is about Jose Mourinho losing his grip on Chelsea. This is about Wenger having lost his grip for a long time on Arsenal, and it's just, you know, again, not strengthening. They didn't sign an outfield player during the window. This is about Manchester City not having the mentality. Again, these are individual issues for me, not necessarily about, England's so hard, of course they can't compete. Bullshit. Sorry.
No. My main thing is, I've been saying this for like the last two seasons. Premier League may have the best you know, 1 through 20 in the world. But when you compare their top five or even their top six to the other leagues, they don't compare. There's no elite team in the Premier League. As much as people want to look at a Chelsea or a City, where would they finish in La Liga when you look at the top three in La Liga?
Yeah.
Where would they finish? And you know, I just don't think that they're on that level. And Spain specifically is just the top five in Spain. I don't think any other league in the world can match it.
Sure. Hey, look, I mean, that matters. I think obviously parity is better for the overall story of the season. If you don't necessarily have a team in that mix, the Premier League is going to be more interesting to me if everybody's beating everybody else for the time being, than if Chelsea was running away with it or City was running away with it, Eddie. So I mean, it's different strokes for different folks.
Here's my thing though with the parity thing: the Premier League doesn't really have parity. That's a myth.
No, I know.
The same three teams win it every single year.
I'm aware of this. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't in terms of the championship, but you could argue that you know 5 through 20. Any of those teams can beat any of those other teams on a given day. Now, that
doesn't mean anything if the same team wins it every year.
No, I agree. I'm just saying that in the narrow window of parity that's possible in England, they've gotten a little bit more of it recently. But it still doesn't mean it's, as you said, it still doesn't mean it's parity.
Yeah, because look at the top of the table right now. Manchester United, one of the three teams that have won in the past 10 years on a first. If it's not them, maybe it'll be City, one of the other of the three teams who have won it, but that'll end up winning it. And then maybe, you know, Arsenal's not going to win it. Tottenham aren't going to win it. Chelsea, if they ever got their stuff together, might win it, but it's going to be one of those same three teams, just like it is in La Liga, just like it is in just like it is in Serie A. Even in Serie A, Inter Milan were atop the table, and they're one of the same three teams that have won it the past 10 years.
Yeah,
so all this talk about parity.
Yeah.
Like even MLS, like if people want to talk about MLS's parity, if the Galaxy win it again this year, you can't tell me about parity in MLS.
Yeah. I mean, you'd have to split things up, playoffs. Yeah, and I understand. Eddie, I got to run. Appreciate the call, though, man.
Hi, man. Have a good vacation.
All right. It goes Eddie in Brooklyn. I want to squeeze in one more call because Nick in Toledo has been patient. What's up, Nick?
What's going on, Jason? How are you?
I'm very well. I believe, Nick, you were the one that told me today's like International Podcast Day or something.
It is International Podcast Day. I'm so excited about it. I took the day off of work so I could call into your show, man.
Oh, that's amazing. I don't know much about International Podcast Day, but it sounds awesome. So, yeah, celebrate. Yeah, let's all have a podcast party. I don't know what that means. Whatever. What's on your mind today?
Well, it's a good day because you got International Podcast Day today. Plus, my Red Devils, Manchester United, are playing a home game in the Champions League, and they need to bounce back after a difficult loss against Eindhoven, but I think they'll bounce back today against Wolfsburg.
Yeah, I think they'll probably win at home against Wolfsburg. You know, overall, the state of that team, you know, they're in first place, but as we just kind of outlined with Eddie, nothing seems confirmed in the Premier League right now. Nothing feels solid. Nobody feels like a good team, like an elite team.
No, I agree. I think the Premier League's down, clearly, when you see how they're playing in Europe. That's definitely an indication, but hey, you know, where this team has been the last 3 years, I'll take top of the table at this point, Jason.
Okay, fair enough. Are you feeling good about their prospects of staying there, though?
Well, defensively, they haven't really given up many goals. I think when you look at the scoring records in the league this year, they're one of the top teams as far as goals allowed. It's pretty low. The question is always going to be with this team, who's going to score goals? And now they've got Anthony Martial scoring goals. And they needed a striker up top, and they put Wayne Rooney back at the number 10 spot, which I think he's much more comfortable at. And we still haven't even seen Memphis really click on and do something in the Premier League. Once he gets going, if he gets going, watch out.
Yeah. By the way, I like the way you said that, Anthony Martial. Anthony Martial sounds like a cornerback from USC. Anthony Martial sounds like a striker for Manchester United. Nick in Toledo, very good. Thanks for the call, man. Anything else before I let you go?
I just want to say thank you for your show. You do tremendous work both here and on satellite radio, and you know, you make podcasting better because of what you do. So
I appreciate
you and Trevor both.
Nick is a very, very good podcaster in his own right. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate the call. He does his stuff mostly on the NFL. I do soccer, but we all can come together as sports fans and share the love that is, I don't know, whatever. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Soccer Morning. Reminder, tomorrow, Friday, Monday, Jonathan Tanenwalt stepping in, filling my shoes for 3 days. He'll do an excellent job. 10 a.m. Eastern time. 10 a.m. Eastern time. Do not, under any circumstances, send a tweet to Trevor Hayward or at Soccer Morning say, where's the show at 9? Because I'm telling you right now, 10 a.m. Eastern time. Jonathan Tannenwald, Soccer Morning. I'll be back on Tuesday. Thank you very much for listening, guys. As always, remember, the Rabble.TV USA-Mexico broadcast, me and Jared Dubois, October 10th, 9:30 p.m. Eastern. You're going to be watching the game anyway. You might as well listen to us. We'll check you out, or I'll talk to you on Tuesday. Later.
Did my invitations disappear? What happened to my heart?